Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning though, could a higher tax on SUVs be on the cards for Budget 2026? According to the front of today's Irish Independent, tax strategy papers published by the Department of Finance this week say that a tax by weight policy, not by emissions, by weight, one that's in place in countries like France, could help move people towards smaller, more environmentally friendly vehicles. For more on this, I'm joined by Michael Sheridan, motoring journalist, and Michael Pidgeon, Green Party councillor on Dublin City Council. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Michael Sheridan, based on pretty much every conversation I've ever had with you, I can't imagine that you think that this is a great idea.
You know what? It's not a bad idea.
Oh, knock me down with a feather.
Only in the case of if it's needless weight or unnecessary weight. The trouble is, cars have been getting heavier because of demands on increased safety and also people, you know, enjoying their luxuries. You know, they want more comfortable seats, they want massaging seats. But safety features added into cars add weight. And since we shifted in Europe, I'm using the royal we, since we shifted to sort of CO2-based taxation, weight has been a key driver in terms of how cars are designed and built for us. So excess weight is an issue and is needless, but cars naturally have been getting heavier. So if you're looking at this simply, it's a case of saying, well, we're going to penalise people for ownership. Whereas the reality is a lot of people need a larger car. People need seven seats to get families around the place and everything else. So why should they be taxed more? Cars, after all, are far less villainous to our road network than, say, heavy goods vehicles. And we know how essential they are. So the weight taxation, we already have a system in place where we penalize cars for being inefficient through CO2. So why add another cut to the hard-pressed motorist?
Michael Pidgeon. Big cars safe, small cars not so safe, says Michael Sheridan.
I think one of the key things you're missing out on there is about safety for whom, because you might say there's lots of safety equipment in cars, yes, but larger, heavier vehicles are obviously less safe if you happen to be in a smaller car and hit by the big car, or you happen to be not in a car and in some way struck, or perhaps they couldn't see you because of the size of it. I think the Department of Finance has basically come out with this idea to say that they would add an extra charge onto heavier vehicles. And I think that's half right. But something they could do that I think would be smarter and more equitable, maybe deal with some of the concerns that Michael Ella there raised, is that you could also make it cheaper to have a smaller vehicle. So rather than simply adding an extra charge on to say bigger vehicles get more tax, you could also offer a reduction for lighter or smaller vehicles. To deal with also with the family point that he made, which I think is a good one. I have a kid myself and I see how quickly the boot fills up and I know there are issues with car seats fitting in. There is a system in France which has recently moved to a weight-based system. They also offer a family allowance for passenger vehicles. It's not huge, but it means that there's a bit of that the size of a family is taken into account, so that penalty doesn't really bite in the same way.
Laws of unintended consequences here. We're not doing great on getting people into electric vehicles. Hybrids, which would be desirable in many cases, have to have both an internal combustion engine and the battery engine, which makes them an awful lot heavier. So they would end up being penalised when they're precisely the kind of vehicle that you're trying to incentivise. Michael Pidgeon, do you want to take that point first?
Yeah, I think that's true. Battery electric vehicles, fully electric ones, are also quite heavy. Again, you can look at what they've done in other countries. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here. If you look at Norway, for example, where they've also moved to a weight-based system, they are probably the gold standard for electric vehicles. Over 90% of new cars sold in Norway in 2024 were fully electric.
I know, but we can't really use the Norwegian market as an example because they're taking all of their oil revenue and shoving it into subsidizing battery engine cars. It's not a realistic comparison.
I get you, but what we can learn from is the approach they've taken with weight-based taxation. So what you can do is kind of similar to what we already do with VRT, is you can have something of a carve-out and differentiate between battery, hybrid, and fully combustion engines. You can factor that in. You don't have to just do one simple crude calculation, because we do, everyone has to understand that it is preferable for lots of reasons for electric vehicles to take hold. You just have to make sure that when you're doing weight-based calculations, there's kind of a bit of give for battery electrics. We already do that with VRT, where there's kind of an exemption given for new battery electric vehicles. We do that with road tax, where obviously that's emissions based, but there's no emissions directly coming from the back of an electric vehicle. So we're well used to doing this in some ways. Okay. It would simply be a question of getting it right.
Michael Sheridan, do you agree with Michael Ella on that point, that weight doesn't have to be that crude, that there could be a number of carve outs there for hybrids and other forms of EV?
Absolutely, and there need to be. And to be honest, I'm on the same page as Michael. He's fairly focused on Dublin City, and I believe everybody between the canals. There should be massive incentives for people in urban centres to be able to get into small electric cars. And again, batteries add weight, and batteries in your average family size electric car bring the weight of that car up to an old conventional SUV as we'd know it, up to sort of like a Land Rover weight. So weight is always going to be an issue. Nature is kind of working itself out in the sense that Europe dictates the emissions and the average emissions that the manufacturers have to push out. The trouble is you've Germany that wants to push and promote large vehicles. And then you've got France, who loves small little hatchbacks and small cars. So they continually are trying to promote people hopping into smaller, efficient things, which is a great thing. But in Ireland, we do more mileage than your average European. We've so many more back roads and borings and everything else. So people are still reliant on their car, and larger cars and working vehicles outside of the cities. I'm all for people right-sizing, and that's probably the most important message that the government need to try and get across to people. Incentivize the small stuff and just make the big stuff, ideally, you know, make it available for people who really need it and find ways to make it accessible, and also then acknowledge that there are people just buying vehicles to show off their wealth and their consumption, and let them away with it because they're paying a fortune in taxes anyway, and that all goes into the exchequer. So it's a win-win as it is.
Okay, but should we be letting them away with it when the nature and the layout of roads around city centres is going to be changing, one would hope, very dramatically over the course of the next 10, 15 years to allow for much more active travel, much more bicycles and much more pedestrians. Those cars aren't safe around those other road users.
No, actually, that's where, when I mentioned the safety systems, the majority of safety systems being fitted to cars now include autonomous emergency braking, which is standard, which came in from Europe. That means that a car will not collide or will mitigate any forward collision. In years to come, those safety systems will not allow cars to collide with other cars. Near-field communication, all of these sort of things, they're all coming and they're all gradually being mandated by Europe. So vehicles will not be able to crash in. You won't be able to open your door if there's a bicycle coming along beside you. You won't be able to reverse out as it stands now. If reverse traffic alert, if you reverse out of a space and you have this fitted to your car, it will put on the brakes if a pedestrian walks past your car. So all of those safety features are coming, okay, which will make vehicles incapable of crashing.
Now that all sounds great, but might you be being a little bit of a techno-optimist?
Well, no, it's coming down the line. So we need to still let people buy this tech and buy new vehicles. But the most important thing, and I think Michael would agree on this, is that people right size and buy the most efficient car that does the least damage to the environment and minds themselves. I mean, nobody goes out to have a crash. Nobody buys an SUV because they want to go out and have a crash. Okay. You know,
Michael,
that's the simple thing.
I think there's an element of the kind of make me chase, but not yet to that. Like I have an electric vehicle. It has a lot of some of the safety features you're talking about in terms of lane assist and, you know, the brakes will kind of slam on if you're about to reverse into something. But that tech isn't perfect and it's not universal and it's not entirely here. So we also have to deal with the world we're in now, because it's not going to be acceptable if someone suffers a large injury to say, well, in 20 years, we're going to have better technology as standard everywhere else. I think you do have to take into account, you still give people freedom of choice, but I think we should be more aggressive in pursuing what I would say are kind of some of the larger vanity vehicles, because I see whether it's in Dublin City Council or a small rural town, they take up so much more space. The visibility from them is poor. They add surely to just visual clutter on the streets. They also break down roads more.
But
I,
Michael,
think that sort of thing,
the
you do have to be a bit more aggressive.
It's kind of ridiculous. Your average SUV doesn't take up as much space as a standard estate car. So they don't. They just look more imposing because they tend to be taller. Now the reality is they are less efficient.
And that's a reasonable thing.
Not aerodynamic. Yeah, no, it's up to the user to decide whether they want a more aerodynamic version of a vehicle. And that makes more sense. And that's why we're seeing a trend now towards what they're calling crossovers. So the taller SUV is less fashionable. Manufacturers are giving us lower set vehicles where the drivers still have a taller commanding position of the road ahead, but the vehicle is a little bit more aerodynamic. To be honest, everybody should just be in cars if they want to make the car as aerodynamic as possible. But the trouble is people want choice, and let people have choice.
Okay, but Michael Sheridan, the taller the car, the further your view down the road, the less that you're seeing about what's going on immediately in front of the car. And in an urban setting, that's crucial, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you're... that's not really the case, because it depends on where you're sitting and if you're seated properly in your car. Like if you sit into as I call it, a full fat Range Rover, and you put the seat on the lowest setting and you're only 5 foot tall, you, apart from being an idiot, you're giving yourself a terrible view of the road ahead. But if you adjust that seat height to the right thing, you may as well be driving around the city on a stepladder. You have a very commanding view of the road around you.
Not immediately in front of the engine of the car, though. I mean that.
But that's again, you've got parking sensors on virtually every new car now. If somebody is in front of the car, or if a pedestrian's walking in front of your car, or if a toddler is in front of your car, you will hear bings and bongs. And again, yeah, if you haven't been observing, the driver has to take some responsibility here in terms of how they observe and how they see what's coming up and what's around them. So that doesn't really hold water, that argument against
Well, let me
SUVs.
Just put that point to Michael Pidgeon. All of these cars have constant alarms going off to let you know what is and isn't in your immediate vicinity. So do those concerns about reduced visibility diminish or decrease, Michael Pidgeon?
Somewhat, but not really, to be honest with you. I think we all know that it's good for people to have choice, absolutely. No one's talking about bans, but they are talking about using the taxes to influence those choices, because the state, the public good, has an interest in vehicle sizes on roads. It's not just about individual driver preference, it's also about the composition of what we want on our roads. It is good to have safety features. It is good to have automatic safety features. We all welcome them and hopefully use them. But they're not going to compensate totally for the fact that you're putting larger and larger vehicles there that are at higher risk. And ask yourself a basic question. If you were accidentally walking out into traffic, maybe it's your fault, you weren't paying attention, you would much rather a smaller, larger vehicle than a Range Rover coming your way.
Michael's Pidgeon and Sheridan, thank you both very much. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.